I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids, we all have families we want to take care of, and I personally checked something off major on my to-do list, life insurance. It's a tough topic, it's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Welcome to the Success Story Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Clary. On this podcast, I have candid interviews with execs, celebrities, politicians, and other notable figures, all who have achieved success through both wins and losses, to learn more about their life, their ideas, and their insights. I sit down with leaders and mentors and unpack their story to help pass those lessons on to others through both experiences and tactical strategy for business professionals, entrepreneurs, and everyone in between. Without further ado, another episode of the Success Story Podcast. Thanks again for joining me. Today, I'm sitting down with Mohan Embar, who is a polyglot and software engineer who's out to destroy the myths that are holding us back from one of the most low-effort, high-impact things we can do as an entrepreneur or as an individual, learn a foreign language. So he speaks 8 languages himself, but that puts him in the top 1% of all polyglots. And just to clarify, polyglot is somebody who can speak many languages. He's co-founded the company called Polytripper, which connects language teachers to language students. Now think Airbnb for languages. Now, what started as an aha experience while reading the back of a can of cocoa during his first trip to India when he was 6 years old turned into a lifelong obsession for learning languages and showing others how easy it is. Mohan has lived, worked, and studied in several European countries and is out to share his discovery and passion for what he calls linguistic Narnia to anyone who will listen. So thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate you sitting down. I'm excited to hear your story.
Thank you. So
let's just discuss what is a polyglot? Because I don't know if everybody who's listening knows what a polyglot is.
Sure. A polyglot. So you've got monolingual, which is most people in English speaking countries. That means you only speak one language. Then there's bilingual, where you can speak 2 languages. And then polyglot is basically anyone who speaks 3 languages or more. So of course, I mean, within polyglots is 3, 4, 5, 6, some people speak 17, 18, 20 languages. So once you speak a certain number of languages, once you speak more than 3 languages or more, then you're a polyglot. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's very good. And when you say you're in the top 1% of all polyglots, I was actually pronouncing it incorrectly. I was pronouncing polyglot, but it's polyglot, so I apologize for that. So the top 1% of all polyglots. So how many languages do you speak now?
I speak 8 languages. I think it's the top 1% of all language speakers. I have to relook at that stat, but it's the top 1% of all language speakers, definitely. And I know that once you go beyond 3 languages, the number of people in the world that can speak 4, 5, 6 languages actually goes down dramatically. So, I mean, I need to double check that, but I speak 8 languages. I speak, and with various degrees of fluency. I don't speak Swedish as well as I do French, for example, but I can have unbounded conversations of any length in all of these languages that I speak, which is English. In order of how well I speak, I'm English, French, Dutch, my wife is Dutch, Spanish, Italian, German, Portuguese, and Swedish. I think that's 8. I don't know if I left one out. I have a hard time.
Said English. Wait, English, Dutch. French, Dutch.
English, French, Dutch. Spanish, Italian, German, Portuguese, Swedish. That's 8. Yes.
Very good. Very good. So how do you become a polyglot? I mentioned this story in India. I didn't give any context. So what's the story in India let's back it up to your life. How did you start? How did you learn your second language, for example, and go from there, and also like career, like bring out, you know, who you are
as an individual?
Sure. So it started out where, and I'll touch on this briefly because I don't want to dwell on myself so much as like talk about the benefits that language learning can have from other people. But just from my perspective, what happened was I was born to Indian parents. They emigrated from India to the United States in the 60s or so. And so they're actually 17, as far as I know. I'm not that good with Indian culture because I was born here, but I think there's 17 different distinct languages in India, each with their own script and each with like their own alphabet and stuff like that. So it's like it's pretty linguistically diverse there. And they had two different mother tongues, so they always spoke to each other in English. So the only time I'd hear a different language is when my dad would talk to his parents or his sister, or when my mom would talk to her brothers and sisters or to her parents. But already there was like this fascinating thing. And as you grow up, as you're a kid, you always hear about these things like secret decoder rings or secret, you know, secret ciphers and secret codes and stuff like that. So for me as a 6-year-old, it was like, this is like, I'd really love to have like a secret language that I could talk that my sister couldn't understand and stuff like that. So that was the start of like, how do I learn this secret code where I could talk about things that other people can't understand? And then I would always beg my mom to teach me, but I think she was concerned about me having an Indian accent and being made fun of in school, which is complete nonsense. People who are bilingual don't have an accent typically. And so those fears were unfounded, but she never taught me an Indian language. And I was always frustrated that I didn't know one, like, and I wanted to. And I think one time when I was 8, I begged her to teach me to say something in Telugu, which is her mother tongue. And she said, okay, I'm going to say it. And then she said it and I repeated it. And she said, aha, you have an American accent when you say that. And that was like the last time I ever asked her for any kind of help or guidance.
Very demotivational.
Yes, it was very demotivating. But that said, when I went to India for the first time when I was 6 years old, I remember being in my grandparents' house and there was a can of cocoa. And on the back of that can of cocoa, there was the description of the cocoa written in Hindi and also in English. And I looked at my uncle and I said, this is a cipher where basically this word in Hindi is this word in English. And I thought it was like a one-to-one correspondence between the words in Hindi and the words in English. And he's like, no, it doesn't work that way. And I was like, oh. And it was basically the unpacking of why that wasn't the case that led to everything else, I would say. Just basically that initial spark of why doesn't it work that way? You know, if it doesn't work that way, how does it work? You know, that kind of a thing.
And then I guess as you understand and unpack more languages, you understand that like you start to go into like the history of languages and where and the cultures and the parts of the world where they come from. And like walk us through, I guess, you know, let's do a master class in languages very briefly before we get into like the practical application today. Why are they not one-to-one?
Why are they not one-to-one? Well, I guess I'm not a linguist, but I guess just basically when different groups of people, I don't want to say grow up, but when different groups of people just actually develop language, there are different ways of that they find for expressing sounds. It's really interesting. And I'm not a linguist by any stretch of the imagination, but I think like there's certain words like mama and papa, which are almost universal. Like they're like in far flung places, like languages like Chinese and Swedish, which aren't any even remotely related. They're pretty much the same words. I think it's true of Chinese because those are the first sounds that babies make. Ma 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 ba 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 ba. So I think those words kind of came from that. But aside from that, when you think about the grammatical structure of Chinese or Russian or German or English, they're just so different. And that's one of the things that I think can give people, this is like a really low hanging fruit way for people to do something for personal development that checks off so many different boxes. When I read one of your Facebook posts, which talked about things that you should put on your resume if you don't have any like hard skills, mm-hmm. You were mentioning things like resilience, coping with pressure, punctuality, overcoming obstacles, all those things. I can't think of any one thing that checks off so many personal development check boxes as learning a foreign language. And that's, I think, the gospel that I want to spread. I know that your audience is primarily like people who are interested in business growth and business development, I think, unless I'm mistaken.
Also you're right. But I don't think that you speaking about the development of different languages is so out of line. I'm going to double down on what you just said and just to reemphasize. Sure. I grew up in Ottawa where, you know, you cannot, you're in the States, I'm Canadian, I grew up in Ottawa, I'm in Toronto now. Toronto is not so much the case, but Ottawa is a very bilingual city. Mm-hmm. So Ottawa is so much so that if you don't speak French, it's very hard to get a job that interacts with people anywhere. And if you want to, so my father worked for the federal government for his entire, he's actually ex-police and then turned into federal government. And in the federal government, you have to get your levels of language. So again, sort of like, it's mandatory levels and you have to pass tests to show that you have a certain proficiency in French, Canada's second language. So you have a certain, and if you don't have that proficiency, you can't get a job. You can't have direct reports. If you are a manager in the federal government in Canada and somebody is reporting to you, somebody is one of you, you know, people on your team, if you don't have a proficiency in French, you won't get that job because they have the right to be able to communicate with you both written and orally through whatever type of language they deem fit as long as French or English. So if you can't speak French, you can't communicate with your employees if one of your employees wants to speak French to you. So
I've heard that they're really gung-ho about that. Yeah,
they're very gung-ho. Gung-ho. So I, you know, that's one of the reasons I grew up speaking French. And I moved to Toronto for career career opportunities when I was younger because I didn't want to deal with the language aspect. It was just it was too much. It was too stressful. It was like it's something that I didn't know how to accomplish. Like I spoke French, but not at the level they required. So I'm just going to change cities because bigger city, less hurdles with different languages. I can just speak English and just be fine. So that's a real issue in Ottawa. And, you know, Ottawa is not by any means like the center of commerce in the world, but it still is. If you grow up in that city, you better prepare. If you want to get into most opportunities or most careers, you better be prepared to learn French, especially in the government.
Isn't that true? Like, isn't in Quebec, there's a rule that businesses over a certain size have to speak French every day, like on a day-to-day basis when they're conducting their business? I heard something crazy like that.
The language laws are a little bit nuts. There's a few different ones. So I don't know the laws inside and out, but I do know that just through, casually perusing different newspapers and media stories, there was at one point laws where you had to have French signage. You had to have, like, if you had your storefront, you couldn't have like an English-only sign. You had to have French, like, and I think that there is something to be said. If you're over a certain size, like you have to have so many employees that can communicate in French. And that was predominantly in Quebec, to be quite honest. I think that outside of Quebec, they don't have as such strict language laws, especially for private businesses. But I do know that one of the main concerns was not so much in Quebec. There are obviously English parts of Quebec, but Quebec is predominantly French. But in Montreal is a very diverse city. And there are parts of Montreal that are more English than Ottawa. So, we're going through all this, all these Canadian cities and whatnot, and people are listening and not from Canada. They may not know like where Ottawa is, where Montreal is. But the second you go to Montreal, you will have parts of Montreal that are completely English neighborhoods, completely French neighborhoods. And imagine telling an English business owner in an English neighborhood that serves predominantly English clients that because, they're in Quebec, they have to abide by French language laws. And that was like a huge point of contention in a lot of, political arenas and whatnot. But yeah, so just, I didn't mean to take you off track there. Apologies. But yeah, I've lived through the benefits and to me it was an inhibitor, but I could understand the benefits of understanding, more than one language for sure, obviously.
I feel bad because it sounds like that was a source of trauma for you. And I think that for a lot of people who have taken language classes or have been forced into that kind of situation, or also have taken language classes in school, for example, like one of my pet peeves is the quality of foreign language instruction in the United States, because when I love languages, and for me, they're a tool for for human connection. And also I find myself kind of boring sometimes. And I love learning about different cultures and different people and different things. And so languages are a tool for that because they allow me to just see these other universes, these parallel universes. I mean, we don't have parallel universes in real life that we know about, but I think going to another country, actually speaking that language and seeing things from their point of view and being able to communicate them is the closest thing to a parallel universe that we'll get in this lifetime. And so it pains me whenever I hear stories for me, who loves this so much, to hear that you went through that experience of that being imposed on you, where people were forced to learn the language for whatever reason, where people have had these really dry university classes. I remember when I came back from Switzerland, I did my year abroad in Switzerland, junior year abroad in the French speaking part of Switzerland. And then I missed that so much when I came back that I took a university language class with a person who wasn't a native French speaker. He spoke okay, but he wasn't a native. And I remember just being so disappointed in that class. We were learning about this really boring as sin French literature, these philosophers like Voltaire and Rousseau, which is probably interesting for some people, but I just like talking to people. You as a podcaster, you like connecting with people. Here we were just like reading these things in like these French grammatical tenses that people didn't even use anymore because it was written in the 16th or 17th or whatever century that stuff was written in. And my God, people have such, for something that can give people so many positive things and so many positive benefits, people have such a skewed notion of what this thing is. And you probably see that a lot as someone who advises people on business development. It's really easy. Anyone can say, I can coach you in your business development, you know, and they're probably like about, I don't know how many percentage of 90% quack coaches there are for like 10% gems, you know, and you have this in any profession. You have this in the medical profession, you have this in the computer profession. And the two common characteristics are, A, it's really easy for people in that field to speak in terms to lay people outside of that field that they're an expert and to convince them they're an expert when they're really not. And B, there's so many wildly different theories and ways of growing a business or learning a language or writing a good computer program that it's really difficult for a lay person to listen to those different approaches and say, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And typically, you know, you hire the consultant, the computer programming consultant, he screws your project up. And then like, you know, God only knows how much money out the window later, you realize that you made a mistake. But I really feel for people who don't have the clarity on knowing the right way to approach this, and the benefits that it can bring and also the joy that it can bring when you're not forced to do it, where you're not taught things the wrong way. See what I mean?
I think that's genuine passion. I think that's what genuine passion is. It's when you really want to help people, irregardless of like monetary compensation, right? That's when you know you're doing something that you truly love. And I don't know if it was traumatic. I think I probably could have just tried a little bit harder, but you know, just made myself learn a language if I really wanted to get a job. And I'm sure that moving to a bigger city where there's more opportunities for me at least wasn't traumatic. It was probably like a little bit strategic as well. And if I wanted to stay in Ottawa, I could have figured it out. But I know that everything you're speaking about in terms of like these dry language classes, I felt that. I think everybody who's learned a language in a formal educational setting, I think, has felt that to some extent. And let's understand, like, how do you learn languages, and what's the best way to learn a language? Why do you find that the way that universities teach it is just dry and mundane? What framework are they following? I'm curious to get your opinion on that.
Sure. So before I go into like how to learn a language properly, let's go into why people who think that they might not necessarily want to learn a language would want to learn a language. It's my thesis that, I mean, for me, I get personal joy out of it. I get the connection. To share my experience, when I went to Montreal, I hadn't been there since I was a kid. And so I wasn't sure to what extent I would be able to speak my French there with the people there. I thought it was going to be like this fake French or like, you know, that, but it was, there were places where I was just totally immersed in. Like, I went to some French-speaking neighbors. It was like total immersion, and I loved it. I loved being able to communicate with the people there. I loved being able to see, like, and when they spoke, sometimes their English wasn't even that great either. I mean, they could speak well, but it was clear that French was their foreign language, and they weren't just speaking French for the sake of speaking French, where they could have easily gone into English. Sometimes their French was markedly better than their English. And so it was like a total immersion experience, and I absolutely loved it. But aside from the joy that people who actually love languages can get by learning a language, I feel like this is like a really understated, like underappreciated vehicle for personal development, that anyone who's an entrepreneur, who's a business person, the qualities that you need to be a successful business person that you mentioned in your Facebook post about, like, coping with pressure, overcoming obstacles, communication skills, problem solving, learning a foreign language, even if you don't learn it for anything other than that personal development aspect, is totally worthwhile, because it's a really low-hanging fruit way of acquiring a skill that allows you to check off all of those personal development checkboxes. So I would encourage any entrepreneur, even if they think that they don't want to do that, to actually use that as a vehicle for those other things, because it's a really non-threatening way of doing it. And it checks off so many boxes at once. Not to mention the fact that, like you touched on, where it opens up more job opportunities in certain places. And even if you're not working in a place where they require the language there, I'm sure that if you put on your resume, "I'm bilingual in French and English and French," or "bilingual in English and Spanish," it's gonna jump out at an employer that, wow, okay, this person has this edge that other people don't necessarily have. And also, when you look at language from the point of view of increasing memory skills, they've done studies where they show that people who get dementia, knowing a foreign language can actually stave off the onset of dementia by another 4.5 years. When I look at people who understand that brain development is something that's necessary, and now you have these companies where you can go online and make turtles jump over other turtles in order to increase your brain power, I just want to go through the screen and shake them and say that there's a so much better, more satisfying way of doing this. Instead of like making turtles jump over other turtles, you could be going online and talking to someone in Italy, or you could be going online and talking to someone in Chile or Peru or Spain, and actually having like human interaction that's developing your brain, that's you know, giving you all of these soft skills that you mentioned in that Facebook post that you need as an entrepreneur, and having so much more fun than jumping over turtles. So that's really why I think that people should look at this really often ignored way of doing personal development. And then to touch on your point as to how to learn a language, definitely not the way that you learn it in high school, in most high schools and universities. And like I said, I don't know if I'm being unfair to these teachers, because they're hamstrung by the curriculum requirements. I don't have the clarity on that to know what they're actually going through as far as satisfying their curriculum requirements. When I actually look at the way this thing is taught, it's really taught as really like this dry, sterile thing where you have to memorize a bunch of grammatical rules that you're going to forget the second you walk out this room, in order to be able to read these boring works of literature that are really irrelevant. Well, I don't want to say irrelevant. I don't want to diss the literature. Obviously, a bunch of people have decided that literature is important, but I mean,
but it's not accomplishing the goal of learning a language. It's a cultural. So I've actually, just to highlight that, because I don't want to mince your words, and I understand exactly what you're saying, but I want to clarify. So when they teach in school, I think they teach the verbal, like the oral, like the speaking. Then they teach the proper grammatical structure, so you can write it. And then they teach ancillary works that just like complement from like a cultural or point of view that sort of have helped to reinforce and bring like the whole culture and language forward over history. So all these buckets are important, but I think that it's the 360 approach that dissuades people from learning something that is a little bit more applicable in most people's lives. Most people are not going to quote Voltaire. Most people don't need to write a thesis paper in plus que parfait like French, right? Like they don't, you know, like there's all these different things that you learn in school that are not applicable. And listen, this is a much larger conversation. I would love to have a conversation about the things you learn in school that are not applicable in your day-to-day. But I think that language, if there was a focus on speaking, as opposed to, because if I go to Germany, if I go to France, if I go to I don't know, if I go to like Beijing, I want to be able to speak with people. I would also love to be able to write, but I'm probably only there for like a week, 2 weeks. And I probably want to be able to, you know, converse casually, you know, order food, like go get directions. Like these are things that as a tourist, as somebody who is just trying to sort of break in, I would love to do. But instead, I'm just either being obnoxious and just speaking English to people that obviously can't understand me, or I'm relying on an app that translates in real time. And that's that. Those are like my options as me. And I try and be sensitive, and I love to learn stuff, but it's like, I wish there was an easier way to do it. So that's kind of what you're saying. Like schools do a 360. It's great if you want to understand everything about it, but for a lot of people, that's not the end goal, realistically.
I think schools touch on a number of important things, but I'm not even convinced about the 360 part, because I know people that, you know, study their Spanish as their major. They can't really speak Spanish. I think some of the focus is on the oral stuff. And I think here, for example, in Santa Barbara, it's a lot better than it was in Wisconsin, because in Santa Barbara, there are a lot of native Mexican speakers who are teaching in the schools, versus I think those people are harder to come by in places like Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That said, it's really easy to what extent you can hide behind literature and term papers and final exams and stuff like that as like a crutch for actually not being obliged to speak. And that's one thing I really find missing. Through all my university classes, through all my high school classes, there was never one moment, I think if there had been like an actual German person there that I had to talk to, and I was just put in a room and that German person is like, if you don't find a way to communicate, then you're not going to be able to say anything interesting. That would have been much more meaningful than trying to like go through the German irregular verbs and then in order to be able to take a final exam on that. And I think that's the part that's really missing from a lot of schools. The notion of like, this could be a vehicle to understand a different culture, to understand different people, and to make yourself be able to express yourself in those languages, and really just have like this window into like a fascinating alternate reality that I don't know, I just find that just so fascinating that language can be a tool for that if you approach it with that mindset and if you learn it properly.
So how do you learn it properly then? So I appreciate that. Yeah, how do you learn it properly?
Sure. That's a very good question. So first of all, you have to start with your personal goals, because everyone has different reasons for learning a language. And that's one thing. We did a Facebook Live yesterday, and then I got the question from one of our listeners. There's a school in Denver that says you can learn Spanish in 15 days. Is that true? And I was like, I can teach you Spanish in 5 seconds if your goal is to say hola, and I just teach you hola, and then there, I've taught you Spanish. So what do you mean? Like, what do you mean teach you Spanish? Like, what? It all has to start with your personal goals, which are going to vary differently from person to person. And then once, and this is true of anything, and you know this too, you start with your specific goals, and then you reverse engineer that to find out the how from that. So if we look at the desire of a person, okay, so someone who just wants this for personal development, and I would say, okay, let's use the common case. Let's use the common case of I want to go and I want to travel to a country and I want to be able to speak the language to the person. Okay. The first question is, to what degree do you want to be able to speak? Do you want to be able to speak it when you go to the restaurant or order food? Or do you want to be able to actually like live with a host family? And do you want to go work in the country for 6 months? You have to look at your specific goal, and then that leads to a goal of proficiency. How proficiency do I want to become? And I reason according to the common European framework for language proficiency, which starts with A1 being like a total complete beginner who knows nothing. And then it's A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, where C2 is like basically near native. It's basically as close as you can get to being a native without being a native. And so once you figure out what level of proficiency you want, there's also like with speaking and with writing, you know, I want to be able to speak it but I don't care about writing, or I want to be able to write it, I don't care about speaking. I want to be able to read medical text because it's really important for my field, but I don't actually care if I speak it. Once you figure that out, then you reverse engineer that. And I would say reverse engineering that always involves some combination of self-study and online language instruction. And it's the online language instruction that people who don't, and this is my gospel that I want to preach to everyone who doesn't know about this stuff. For people who don't know about this stuff, our common friend, the one who actually referred me to you, at one point in time, he asked me this question, like, why wouldn't I be able to use Duolingo and just be okay with that? Everyone, I think basically everyone knows what Duolingo is. This is a free app that you can use for drill in practice in order to learn, in order to get some proficiency in a language. And Duolingo is great. Drill in practice stuff is good. But if you divorce that from online language instruction, and I'm assuming basically that people here won't have the luxury of just going and upping and living in Italy for a year mm-hmm. or 2 years, you know, because the best way to get proficiency in a language is actually go live in the country itself. That's undisputed. But if we assume that people don't have that luxury, then the best way to get proficiency is to get a feedback loop. People know this with piano. Like people who want to learn how to play a musical instrument, it would be unthinkable for them to just get a bunch of books and then just try to learn how to play the piano without a teacher saying, hey, you know what, you're not arching your hands properly, or you need to do your scales, or you know what, let's focus on these exercises for your left hand, because in order to be able to play this piece, you're going to be able to increase your left hand muscles. That's literally obvious for people who have taken music lessons, who have like forced their kids to take music lessons. They know that this feedback loop is necessary, and yet people will go for months or years, if they actually stick with it for that long. And that's another thesis of mine, because the as you know, with any learning any new skill, the most important thing isn't this technique or this technique. The most important skill for something that you are not forced to learn is to not lose interest. That's the most important thing. If you lose interest, you're going to stop, and then it's game over. So that should be the overarching thing of anything that you're forced to, anything that you want to learn that you're not forced to learn. How do I find a way to not lose interest? That's number one. Okay. And then within number one, it's reverse engineering your goals. And then with that, it's, I need the feedback loop. It's actually absolutely insane to think that you can do this on your own without a feedback loop. Because if you're, just imagine with piano, and this is something that I did, I used to skip to, I didn't have the patience to, when I was taking lessons, to do my scales or to do the simple pieces. I wanted to skip straight to Scott Joplin and The Entertainer and stuff like that. And once I managed to just, it's like freaking, I'm just going to do this, spend several weeks on it. And I learned how to play Scott Joplin. I learned how to play The Entertainer. And I went to my piano teacher with that, because she had basically given up on me because I never used to practice. She'd give me these assignments and, I would never practice them. I'd just come there and we'd just be doing the same pieces over and over again because I would never practice them. And then one day I said, oh, I can do Scott Joplin. And I played The Entertainer for her, and she was both impressed and horrified, because she was impressed that I actually was able to muscle my way through it, but horrified because my technique was just so god awful horrible. I was just really just putting my fingers in the wrong place and doing things that were, instead of doing other things. And you could just see the look on her face, like, how am I going to get him to unlearn this stuff now so he can actually play this thing properly? Because he's just reinforced his bad mistakes over and over and over again without actually learning, just having the little tiny point interventions along the way in order for me to be doing that properly. And so that's why people who think that they can do this alone without any kind of feedback loop are just missing the fundamental truth that this is the kind of stuff that you can't do without feedback loops, and B, they're also foregoing a very big opportunity to have an additional degree of human contact and also accountability. There's some, when you look at it's not maintaining 8 languages, and there's weeks that I neglect some more than others. And when I look at, for example, Swedish is like one of my most probably unloved languages. I can, like I said, I can speak it enough to have an unbounded conversation, but I don't focus on it as nearly as much as I could, because in some ways it's more thankless than the other languages. Like, all Swedish people think they have the God-given right to speak English with other people, and a few wonderful exceptions. There's some actually wonderful exceptions that I hope, if they're listening to this, that they know that they don't fall into this category of those Swedish people. But unlike Spanish people and Italian people, where if you just make a little bit of effort to speak their language, they're like, oh my God, this is so amazing, good job, go get them. You know, Swedish people and Dutch people are like, why are you doing this? You know, we all speak English. Like, why would you ever want to do this? And that can be extremely demotivating.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive. And I bet you we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay, and what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. Thank you so much, Indeed, for sponsoring Success Story. For all business leaders out there, Indeed is a lifesaver. See, we're always driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You're going to ditch the busy work and you're going to use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
Said I found a couple of wonderful exceptions. And like with the Swedish person that I do my biweekly conversations with, he's basically the only reason that I'm making forward progress, because there's I would say most weeks I do absolutely nothing except talk to him. And that's the only forward progress I'm making. And I know for a fact that if he were not in my life, I know for a fact that if my Italian teacher, who I meet religiously every Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning, regardless of how stupid I was the previous night and watching YouTube video till 3 in the morning, and it's like, oh my God, I want to cancel this because I'm not going to get enough sleep. No, it's like a gym buddy. It's like an accountability partner. You have to show up. And if you have to show up, then it's an accountability partner. It's a reason to actually to make forward progress, even though you would have probably been inclined to like drop that or give up on your own. So that's what I would say, a combination of to go back to answering your question, which is like a roundabout way of doing it. I would say reverse engineer your goals and then find some combination of self-study and an online language partner, unless you're able to live in the country, which is highly unlikely, that will allow you to achieve your goals. Does that answer your question?
It does. It definitely answers my question. And how does Polly Tripper accomplish this? Because that's, I'm assuming, what your software, what your company is achieving. So you're trying to create all those points, or you're trying to touch on all those points that help reinforce the right behaviors, help bring accountability. And you bundle that up into something that is not just a type of software that, like you mentioned, I can't remember the exact verbiage you said, but you said where it prompts and then you respond and that's the only interaction you have with the software. So how does Polly Tripper, because I reference it as like the Airbnb of language teaching. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Oh, it's totally accurate. Yeah.
So how does the software actually accomplish that? So what lay out how it actually works. If I was going to like sign up for it, what does it do?
Sure. So the term you were looking for with apps like Duolingo is drill and practice, which
definitely has
its place, but that those are actually a sterile thing. So with Polly Tripper, what you do is it's like an Airbnb for language teachers and language learners. And so say you're learning Spanish, you would go online and you could basically all the teachers, people who want to teach, and we have two types of teachers. We have professional teachers and informal teachers. Anyone can sign up to teach a language on Polly Tripper if they speak a language natively or also non-natively. People can, like, they're Italian teachers who teach English to other Italians, so they can sign up for our site too. But they basically, anyone can sign up that we accept. And they indicate whether they teach professionally or informally. Informal teachers have no other obligation other than to be able to engage their students and carry on a conversation in their native language. So anyone off the street could say, I want to sign up to be an English teacher, and we would accept them probably. If they, I mean, obviously wouldn't accept them if they, you know what I mean, basically. We would accept most people. Professional teachers have an additional requirement that they be able to create more structured lessons for their students. And also we require some professionals to handle total beginners. So if you were a complete beginner with Spanish, I'm not saying that you couldn't use an informal teacher, but chances are, you know, you see, I've seen informal teachers who sign up and say, I don't do grammar. I don't actually know grammar. I mean, how well are most English people able to explain the grammatical rules of their language? So that's,
I know I can't. You know, maybe some, but like really, if you're going to drill me, I probably wouldn't do so well.
Exactly. So if I were to ask you a grammatical question, you wouldn't be able to answer, but that wouldn't mean that you wouldn't be able to be a valuable conversational partner for me as an informal teacher. So we have those two mix of teachers, and the teachers can sign up as a professional. Unlike competitor sites, we interview all of our professional teachers. And this goes back to the point of us being passionate about this. This isn't just a business for us. People are not just numbers for us. We really want people to have a nice experience on our platform, because we want people to experience some of the joy that we felt when we've learned a language. And so with a lot of sites, it's funny because one of the competitor sites that we're dealing with all the time, people are coming from that site and they have to report that they have a C. You remember I was talking about the different levels that you have, the A1 to C2. They're not allowed to teach on that site unless they have a C2 level. And it's basically very easy. You've heard of the TEFL maybe, or the TOEFL. There's these tests of English as a foreign language tests that people can take in order to certify. So you've got all these dime a dozen rinky-dink online places where you can just basically buy a TEFL diploma. You have to maybe just check a few multiple choice boxes, and then suddenly you get your TEFL diploma. And they can actually take this diploma to that site and say, look, I have a C2 level in English. And that site is like, okay, yeah, sure. Come on in, you know. And so,
and they don't actually vet the people. They don't.
Oh no. And so, well, actually, they vet the people by asking for certificates, but they don't actually have an interview with these people. They don't actually. I've heard the interview process of that company is basically like the Zoom call where you have, like, you know, tiny little squares of a whole bunch of people showing up at that Zoom call where it's just basically like an orientation session versus actually vetting the people. So we vet anyone first of all that says that they want to be a professional teacher. And anyone that says that they have a C2 level in English, because I'm very protective of my language and people misrepresenting my language, especially because of the ubiquity of those fake, not fake, but those rinky-dink TEFL diplomas that you can get online. We've actually had to, like, break the news to several teachers who were signed up as a C2 on that other site that, dude, you'd be a great teacher for our site, but you're not a C2. So either you bump that down a level, or you say you don't teach English, but we won't accept you if you say that you're a C2 in English, and other languages too. So we vet our teachers very carefully. We select the professional teachers with great care, and we really want our students to have a nice experience. And so basically, a teacher signs up, they go online, they set their schedule, just like with Airbnb. You can say what days you're available. They say what dates and times that they're available. They set their calendar. And then you, as a student, can go and select the language and browse teachers who are teaching the languages that you want to teach, see what their prices are, see what their availability is. And then once you see that, you can say, I want to book a lesson for Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning with this teacher. And then you submit your lesson request. And then just like Airbnb, they either accept you or they deny you. And then you go on Skype or Zoom or Hangouts or whatever, and you do the lesson with them. And that's, I can't stress enough how wonderful that feedback loop is. And also I feel like I can't stress enough the additional advantages that we bring to the table over our competitors, because A, we are passionate about this, and they're two actual polyglots who are at the head of this, and every decision we make is informed by wanting people to have this wonderful experience and benefit from this. And B, we also there's the vetting our teachers, but also we take less commission than our competitors from the teachers. We take 33% less commissions from our teachers than our competitors, because we want to take care of our teachers. We care for them. They're an integral part of this experience. And so why wouldn't you want to take care of them? There's one competitor site which makes teachers give their first lesson for free to every student. So every new student that they get as a student, they have to give that. They don't get paid for it. Like, what the hell is that? Like, who does that? There are just so many different ways that we feel that we are better. We do these weekly Facebook Lives. I'm in the trenches with my students. I've actually started learning Russian, which is one of the most difficult languages that you can learn, because I want to be able to go on these Facebook Lives every week and say, hey, I'm in here with you. And Russian is like damn hard to learn. It's very, very difficult. They've got a completely different alphabet. Their grammar is insanely different. They've got these weirdo sounds that you don't have in English.
If you want a language partner, you can speak to my girlfriend. She's fluent. Yeah, yeah.
Is she really? Is she? Yeah. Where is she from?
She's Uzbekistan and Israeli Russian. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Man, hats off to those people. Like, I feel like if Russians have this massive edge as far as people who speak Russian have this massive edge, because I think if you can learn Russian, you can learn any language. Mandarin, like all those Asian languages, are also a different story. That's a completely different universe. I think Mandarin Chinese is my next and final language in this lifetime. And then I'm done with learning languages. But yeah, I'm in the trenches with these people. I'm doing these weekly motivational videos for people, just to fire them up for the coming week. And we treat our teachers better. And also we listen to our students and teachers. There's this one competing platform that had this one really amazing feature called instant tutoring in lessons, where instead of booking a lesson in advance, you could just go on and see which teacher has turned on their instant lesson switch and just instantly book a lesson with them and have half an hour lesson with them on the spot. And then one day they dumped this feature and people were up in arms and like, why did you do that? And they're like, yeah, well, we'll replace it with something better at some unspecified point in the future. This was like over a year ago. People are still in that conversation that are like, what is that thing that you said you were going to replace that with? Where can I go to find instant lessons? Everyone who's listening, we do instant lessons. We come to us because we do instant lessons. And so I think with a combination of like being polyglots who love this stuff, with me being in the trenches, with us screening our teachers very fully, with us paying them, taking 33% less commissions for them, and then us actually listening to the feedback of our students and teachers as far as like what the platform would want. We just recently rolled out two features yesterday, which allowed people to book to teachers to actually configure the time before which they want to accept a lesson. It used to be 24 hours in advance, but we made that 12, 24, and 48 hours configurable by the teacher, because teachers wanted that and we actually listened to them, versus saying, oh, we'll send this to our dev team and they'll prioritize it or something like that. You know, we really hope that a combination of all these things are the reason that people would want to choose us over someone else. And also the understanding that you guys really, really, really need this feedback loop, A, in order to make you not lose interest, B, in order to have like an accountability buddy, and B, in order to, you know, yeah, the feedback loop. It's just all integral parts of this process.
And why is now like the golden age of language learning? Why, like, you know,
point.
It makes sense. So there's a couple of things that we touched on, you know, we spoke about how to learn a language. We spoke about your business practices, like the passion and what differentiates. But like, why is now the best possible time for somebody to pick up a language and actually roll with it and learn it?
I totally forgot I wrote that. And that's a good point, because I've been doing this for a long, long time. I mean, I know I have these youthful good looks and everything like that, but I've been doing this for a long time. And so when I was learning languages, like in the early 90s, for example, it was such a different, I mean, I remember when I came back from France in 1994, we had bought this video camera in France, Wanda and I, and we came back and I bought a car in North Carolina because I was, I didn't want to buy a car in the Midwest, which had corroded, salt, everything just messed up and everything like that. So I bought
That's smart. That's very smart.
Yeah. It was a really cheap used car. And then I drove it to Pittsburgh to visit my dad and we were filming the whole process. I met his girlfriend for the first time and we were filming it. And at one point in time, I was getting into a fight with my dad because he thought a raccoon was a rodent and I didn't think a raccoon was a rodent. And so we were bickering about that. And then we were like, so how would we go about finding out whether a raccoon is a rodent or not? This was 1995, and we all paused. And then his girlfriend was like, Well, there's a bookstore down the corner. I guess we could go there and try to find. I mean, so just think about what that universe was like. And that's the universe that I was doing my language learning in. I would buy these method cassette tapes and I would just read the cassette tapes, and that feedback wasn't there. And when I actually wrote this guide for people to how to learn a foreign language in 1994. And my tips and tricks were get a method with books and cassettes. Try to find a video in the foreign language section of your video rental store. Buy a shortwave radio, because you could definitely pick up maybe foreign language broadcast with a shortwave radio. This was my universe back then. And just the plethora of videos on YouTube, the ability to actually go online with the ability to do what you and I are doing right now. Just talk to each other and I can hear you. I can hear your Canadian accent, actually, you know. And
oh, no.
And I love the Canadian accent, by the way. But I just the ability to do this. When I went to Italy, my original plan, because when I did my exchange program in Switzerland, what I did was I took a university language class the year before in French. And then I met up with a bunch of French people, Swiss people who had done the exchange program in the other direction. I just palled around with them and I made friends with them. And then I went to Switzerland and I took three-week language courses at the university there. And they were with a bunch of foreigners and we were all just kind of muddling through this together and learning this together and so on and so forth. And that was my dream for Italian. I thought with Italian, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to go to this group language class with two foreigners. Learn Italian, and that was my lifelong dream. I just didn't have the time, and I didn't find the spot in my life that I was going to do that, but that was the plan for years and years and years. And then I discovered online language learning, and in 2 years, just with self-study and with the online language teachers, I was able to get such a good level of Italian that it no longer made sense to me to that as my goal to go actually. Treated myself, I rewarded myself with having achieved a certain level of proficiency by going and doing like a week-long language class in Genoa, Italy at a language school, but I had to get a private teacher for that because it wouldn't have been satisfying. And they agreed with me that the level I had achieved even before I had ever gone to Italy to take the language class was just so great that I achieved over with the online language learning that a private teacher was the next logical step in that progression. And the fact that you can get that level of proficiency, the fact that you can get that feedback loop, because the feedback loop was the thing that was missing 25 years ago. The fact that you can get that nowadays with video conferencing is amazing. If I had known that this was the way things were going to shake up back then, I would have just been so excited. And a lot of people, when you're actually in the midst of like existing technology, you don't realize how amazing it is and how many doors that opens up to what was previously possible. But that's why we're in the golden age of language learning now, because of video conferencing, because of the internet, and because of the ability to get that feedback loop with people living in the country, speaking that language that you can talk to right now.
You're so on point and you're so right with that. And I think that we also forget, given, you know, our current landscape with pandemic and no one's traveling anywhere. Imagine if coronavirus or COVID-19 pandemic happened 30 years ago, how cut off we would be. And I think that we're understanding, and people are being forced to understand it and use new technologies. And I say this with a lot of disclaimer as to there's no benefit to obviously COVID-19, but saying that the benefit to COVID-19 is people being forced to adopt new technology, learning how to transact internationally, learning how to conduct business remotely, learning all these new skills that are quite literally going to like change business forever. So mm-hmm. that is the end result of COVID-19. And I guess, you know, the ability to connect and feedback loop and learning and access to information and everything. This is what we're living through now. And this obviously, you know, the ability to learn new things, language being one of them, is just emphasized by our ability to connect with a click of a button, quite literally. So it's very, very, very easy to go and learn new things now. So make sure that, you know, if I speak about this as well, and I appreciate you pulling up my Facebook post, but you didn't have to do that. That's very kind of you. But I speak about like using opportunity now and understanding that we're so connected and we have the ability to go learn. And if you are sitting at home and you have extra time, if you don't, that's fine. But if you have extra time, to go take the opportunity to go learn something. Language could be one of those things, but there's a million, but just now, like, the ability to do and the ability to learn is there. It's right in front of us. And if you aren't upskilling in one aspect of your life, or a variety of aspects in your life, you're really missing out, and you're missing that opportunity. You're missing that, you're missing the boat on that. So I think that now is a great time, with services like Polytripper and whatnot, and even like you mentioned, like the having that feedback loop. Polytripper aligns you with teachers, but you still, if you're just not even going on YouTube and watching videos and learning new things, that's already an issue. But the Polytripper just reinforces to a greater extent, like, the ability to go learn online. So it makes a lot of sense to me.
And one thing I would add to that is that for a lot of people, the feedback loop can be scary because they don't want to look dumb because they're afraid of looking stupid. There are two kinds of people. Either people who are not afraid of looking stupid and they're like, they just don't care. They'll get up and do public speaking or whatever, more power to them. Those people are going to make the best progress in a language because they realize part of the language involves being vulnerable, making mistakes, not being afraid to look stupid, and so on and so forth. For the people on the other hand, who kind of get hung up about this stuff, this is a beautiful, beautiful, our teachers are so patient, understanding, have experience working with beginners and so on and so forth. And so there's no better group of people to guide them through this process, which is scary for some, and overcome those fears. What a better way to overcome a fear than just being afraid of looking stupid and then realize it's not that bad, realizing that there's a patient person that's guiding you through this. And that's, I think, the value of being able to do these online language lessons versus just watching a YouTube video. The YouTube videos are great, and they're definitely a plus in our day and age compared to 25 years ago. But this opportunity to actually have that feedback loop and overcome one's inhibitions, I can't help thinking that that'll make people a better person in so many different aspects of their life other than just their language learning.
Agreed. I think that even if you watch a YouTube video and you do pick up on some things, you're still going to have that apprehension when you go and speak to somebody if it's the first time, right? That's very good. I want to tee this up with a couple just like life lesson questions that you've sort of picked up over your career and your life. Before I move back to focusing on you, was there anything else about language learning, current state of language learning, or Polytripper that you wanted to touch on, or did we do a pretty good review?
No, you did a great job.
No, thank you.
You're all welcome, and I'd love to have you and guide you through this journey because I absolutely love this stuff.
No, thank you. Okay, so a couple of life lesson questions that I like to ask, sort of a rapid fire session at the end.
Sure.
One question is a life lesson that you've learned over your career, both working with individuals as a teacher and as an entrepreneur, that you would impart on someone else that you would tell your younger self.
Sure, definitely. I think one of the most important life lessons that I would teach to people is if you're not an expert in something, then you're high, and it's going to be difficult. We talked about this at the beginning of the conversation, but when you're not an expert in something and you're seeking guidance from people who are supposedly experts, it's very, very, very difficult to actually figure out the BS people from the real deal. And so basically do anything you can to figure that out before you actually hop on the train with an expert and then start taking that ride with them, because you could waste so many years of your life going down the wrong path or being led by the wrong mentor or doing the wrong things. That's what I would tell the younger version of myself. I don't know if I've completely articulated that.
No, I think that was very well put. I think that's great advice because, I also always speak about getting a mentor and mentors in different aspects of your life, which is a great thing to have. But there's a lot of people that are foolish, they're full of it. So you have to make sure that you align with the right people.
It
is difficult. It's very difficult because another side effect of internet and online and being able to go online is people have the lowest barrier to entry to putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful when you're paying somebody anything for any advice ever. I think that's probably, I find, so for me, it's funny. You mentioned, I just want to touch on one thing. I don't mean to take away from that point.
No,
it's a very good point.
Take all the time you need.
But like for myself, I've even found it hard to, like, you know, I've done consulting work for companies in the past, and I even find it hard, like, when I build out, like, my brand online to monetize it. Like, I, you know, when I put out podcasts, I put out YouTube videos, I put out social. Even after I've worked in so many different companies, I've worked in so many different environments, and I'm sure that a lot of the stuff that I do could be monetized, but I feel like there's this, like, there's like a negative energy that comes with people that put out paid monetized online information that I just don't want to be a part of. And I don't know how I, you know, it's a shame, but I think there's a lot of bad actors out there. That's really my main point. So I think that if you are paying somebody for some advice, it could be online or offline. I think that both of them have their, you know, have their bad actors, unfortunately. And I think you mentioned a really good thing, and I don't even know if it was recorded, but you said it was like 10% of experts actually know what they're, something like that. I can't remember the quote, but it was a good point. But that's just due diligence on everyone who you subscribe to, including anything that, you know, you listen to here, like any of the people that come on the podcast, anything that I say, like, just like, I don't know what I don't know. I don't know everything. I hope I have some advice, but I don't know everything. So like everyone who you take advice from, just make sure that you do enough due diligence that you get some like sound, grounded advice, and you can find other people that can hopefully speak to their efficacy.
I think philosophically speaking, I think cracking that code of trying to figure out the BS people from the real people, if we were to be able to crack that code somehow, that would be the most destructive thing I could possibly imagine. I know the things like Yelp and stuff like that are just taking a swing at that, like mm-hmm. like a really kind of small baby swing at that. But what if we're a way of like looking at all these business development people and saying, oh, you know what, this is the right person, and it's actually proven, like, I don't know, like, I don't know any other way of doing due diligence right now. Is just doing a whole bunch of reading and research and stuff like that. And in the end, it's like a coin toss anyway, because yeah. you do your best and you don't know what you don't know. That's the problem. So you just pick someone. But what if somehow that code were crackable? I don't know. I'm just.
I think a lot of people would lose a lot of money if that code was crackable.
Can you imagine how many like investment advisors would lose their job when people realize?
Yeah.
I mean, Warren Buffett says just. There was this one, I'm going off on a tangent here, but Tim Ferriss, you know
yeah, Tim Ferriss. I know Tim Ferriss. Yeah,
so he there's this one thing that he talked about where basically he got into the meeting of the Berkshire Hathaway, and he had it all planned out where he was going to figure out the most strategic microphone in order to be able to ask Warren Buffett this one question. And he did it, and he got the one, and he calculated this, and he actually got the question, and he triumphantly went up to the microphone and he said, if you were an investment advisor, if I had $100,000, what are the actual asset classes, specific asset classes I would invest in for blah, 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 blah. You know, if I just got this inheritance, I didn't have to go back to work. And Warren Buffett looked at him and said, just buy an index fund and invest in the S&P 500 and go back to work. You know, and if most people knew that just investing in the S&P 500 were like the best investment strategy instead of like mm-hmm. listening to all these investments, just imagine how many people would go out of business. You
know, well, the S&P 500 has traditionally outperformed almost every investment advisor ever historically.
Right, right.
So, right.
It's and just that's such a simple truth. And yet you have all, and yet these investment advisors are still in business. Like yeah. it just boggles my mind.
With billions, trillions yes. of under, yeah, yes. of assets under management, you know, so. Yeah, it's interesting. Life is interesting. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
All right. And last question I'd like to ask is one resource. It could be book, podcast, Audible, person that you have read, consumed, listened to in your life that you would recommend people check out.
Ooh, that's a good question. One resource, book, podcast, everything like that. I would say for me, it's like my two biggest idols are Warren Buffett and Dave Brubeck. And Dave Brubeck is a jazz pianist, and he has nothing to do with business development or anything like that. But the takeaway that I get from both of those people were like in two different lines of work is like, I saw a concert with Dave Brubeck and he was 86 years old. He didn't need to do this. He didn't need the money. Warren Buffett doesn't need the money. He feels like he says he feels like he's tap dancing to work every day. People that have actually, because there are a million different ways to make money in this lifetime. There are a million different ways to earn a living. The people I truly, truly, truly admire and aspire to be like are the people that say that they wake up every day and they just absolutely love what they're doing, and they don't believe that they're actually getting paid for it. Anyone like that, and Warren Buffett or David are the two examples that I think of. Man, what a place to be in life, where you're just doing this till you're in your late 80s. You could have stopped a long time ago, but you don't, because you're actually loving it, and money isn't an issue for you because you found the sweet spot where your passion aligns with what people are willing to pay for. I think that's the highest degree of fulfillment that anyone can get in this lifetime, and I would love that to be the case for me too.
Yeah, that's incredible advice, and it's not so much like a resource, but it's just like a person to emulate and aspire to live your life similar to the way that they've been able to set up theirs. And it's difficult for a lot of people, of course, to be able to just pursue your passion. You can't be naive about that, but you still have to say like that is something to definitely aspire to, whatever that looks like in your specific circumstance. I think that's very good advice. Very good advice. And last question would be, where do they go? People that are listening, where do they go to go find out more about Poly Tripper, yourself? Is there a website? I think I pulled it up while we were speaking, but where are all the resources to go find out more?
Sure. So our main website is polytripper.com. Now, polytripper is spelled with one L, not two L's. Whenever it's a really badly chosen name, I think, because whenever Californian people hear polytripper, they think polyamory and acid trips. So we're fighting that uphill a little bit. I think I'm hoping that the fact that the name is searchable enough or maybe raises eyebrows compensate. And I also found out later on that tripper means a venereal disease in German. So the name has got a lot of things stacked against it, but we love the name. We personally love the name, and we already designed a logo, so that ship is built. But yeah, the website is polytripper.com, polytripper.com, one L, two P's, polytripper.com. And also, I've got a free mini course, which is free for people. It's like a 4-part tiny video course, which talks about the mental game that you need for language learning. It doesn't focus on one specific language, but it focuses on how, like, what made polyglots like me, hyper polyglots, I should say. I got recently accepted to the International Association of Hyper Polyglots.
Congratulations.
They only accept people who speak 6 languages fluently or 8 languages conversationally. So I don't know which of those they chose as the criteria for accepting me, but I'm part of this elite. I don't like bragging about myself, but I mean, I guess for getting eyeballs, it's a good thing to throw out.
Yeah,
there.
I think if you run a firm or a company focused on language learning, it's not the worst accolade to have. So.
Exactly. So anyway, I teach a course where I unpack the mental game about why you want to learn a language and also the mental game of how to learn a language. And that can be found at https://polytripper.com with one L /secret.html, secret.html. And it's like a free mini course. It comes with really nice PDFs, and you can use that as just my gift to the world. There are no strings attached to kind of learn about how to learn a foreign language. And finally, I think that's it. Polytripper, polytripper.com. Oh, yes. Finally, you can always email me at support@polytripper.com. One of the things that I'm really happy about right now with the stage of business development that we're in is that we're very small, and I have the luxury of doing individual outreach, and I absolutely love doing individual outreach. So there's going to be a time 2-3 years from now that I'm not going to be able to do that practically with everyone anymore, and that it's going to be a very sad transition for me. It's going to be good, but it's going to be sad because I absolutely love doing the individual outreach. So if you have any questions at all, even if there's not a financial transaction at the end of it, write me at support@polytripper.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/polytripper, post a question there, be part of our Saturday Facebook Lives. We do this weekly Facebook Lives. Like I said, I'm out in the trenches with everyone else doing my Russian, struggling through that. And so we really want to make this a really like supportive, amazing community where people can find out how amazing this language learning thing is for their personal development, for the doors it opens as far as being able to understand, especially in this environment, also the sad environment with racial discrimination and everything like that. I can't help thinking that if people actually learned the reasoning they need in order to understand other people's viewpoints, understand other people's ways of speaking, understand other people's communication styles, that a lot of the insanity we're having in the world today wouldn't be there, because people have actually like strengthened their empathy muscle. And I think it's a really wonderful, non-threatening way of doing that.
That's all for today. Thanks again for joining me on another episode of the Success Story Podcast. You can download or stream this podcast wherever podcasts are available, including iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and many others. You can also watch this podcast on YouTube. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast with your friends, family, coworkers, and peers. Please leave us a rating on iTunes. It takes about 30 seconds as it allows other people to find our podcast and lets our amazing guests reach even more people with their message. And remember, any rating is fine as long as it contains 5 stars. I'm Scott Clary from the Success Story Podcast, signing off.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story Podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's 5 brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's 3 more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. Thank you so much, Indeed, for sponsoring Success Story. For all business leaders out there, Indeed is a lifesaver. See, we're always driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You're going to ditch the busy work and you're going to use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.